From Hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Jeff Maciolik announcing show number 32, recorded Sunday, September 10th, 2006. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Codesmith Tools, makers of Codesmith, an extensible, template-based code generator for .NET. Hansel Minutes listeners get $100 off Codesmith Professional with coupon code HM100. Online at codesmithtools.com. Support is also provided by AsPose, the .NET and Java component publisher. Hansel Minutes listeners get 20% off the price of any purchased product or suite with coupon code HM1234-5678. Online at www.aspose.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Carl about mock objects.
Hi, this is Carl Franklin, and you're listening to Hansel Minutes. I'm here with Scott Hanselman, as I am every week. Hi, Scott.
How are you, sir?
Doing fine. I really enjoyed your DNR TV last week. That was great. Well, this week, actually.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. And today we're talking about mock objects.
Yeah. You know, we talked about test-driven development recently and had some suggestions from a number of people, including Phil Hack, who I respect very much, who said, well, you've got to do one on mocks. And I think that more and more people are doing test-driven development, or they are at least doing lots of tests, as we learned last week.
Right.
Test-driven development and writing lots of tests are different things.
Two different things, right.
One of the things that I find very frustrating is trying to test something when there's a whole stack of stuff underneath that has to be just so.
Right.
You need a database set up, or maybe you need data, you need web services connectivity, and then you end up often just saying, I won't bother testing that. It's too much of a hassle. And that's where mock objects come in.
Mock objects are objects that have the same interface as your real objects, but obviously don't do anything, right?
Right. That's a good way to put it. So you could, of course, just if you had interfaces for all the things you wanted to test, you could just provide an object that implements that interface. So you don't need a mock object framework to do that, but it takes a little bit more work on your effort. Like for my purposes, let's use the example of DOSBlog. So DOSBlog has this very complicated, very icky interface called iBlog Data Service. And right now, there's only one implementation of iBlog Data Service.
Okay.
This is a thing for stuff like get entry and get comments and things like that. And we've always said that one day we would hook it up to a database, even though right now it's talking to XML. But we do some unit testing in DOSBlog, but we usually have to have a folder full of basically fake blog posts
yeah.
to do even the most basic testing.
Right.
So we could, of course, just write an object of our own that implements iBlog Data Service and does basically fakes out the tests. That breaks down when you start getting into the object changing its behavior. So you call it once, it does this, and then the second time you call the same method, it does another thing.
Okay.
So the object has internal state. So then you end up writing a lot of code of your own in this fake object that implements that interface you want to test, and that doesn't necessarily move the ball forward.
Right. I was going to say, I mean, this whole thing, mock object thing, can only work if it's easy to implement, because if you spend more time writing mock objects than your real objects, you're basically wasting time, right?
Exactly. Now, the definition you said was an object that implements the same interface as the one you want to test. That's a good way to put it, but a lot of the newer mock objects technologies within .NET support mocking not just interfaces. They actually mock concrete types.
Hmm.
So you can actually simulate the behavior of an actual object, you know, in a test environment, even if you don't have an interface. So, for example, maybe you can just mark a few methods virtual. And then you can mock that object. Or if you use one of the more advanced ones, they'll use interception technologies that will allow you to mock really anything at all. And this is really useful when the thing that you're trying to test, you know, has some results that change a lot, something that's kind of non-deterministic.
Right.
So we're talking about what if the time changes, or you're doing wind speed, you know, just something that is environmental. Even if you do, you know, if you do the testing such that you have to hook up to a real device, can you fake that device? Can you fake that interface?
Yeah.
Sometimes if it's network connectivity, or if you have to talk to something that's slow, do a database call or talk to a web service. And also, sometimes when you are testing objects, you have to include information that you really don't want to be in the tests, like database connection strings that you'd rather not do. And you're really not trying to test the underlying system. You're trying to test the code that interacts with that system.
Right.
So there's a lot of different frameworks out there. The ones that everyone keeps talking about, if you look around and ask around, are RhinoMox, EasyMock, which is a little older, and a port of a Java tool. Isn't it true that like every .NET tool that's awesome is a port of a Java tool?
Yeah, funny how that works.
NMock2, TypeMock, which is interesting because they're a lot like test-driven.NET. They've got a community version, a personal version, and a professional version. And then there's some other tools like JFlowers Doubler that we can talk about a little bit.
Now, the last time I talked about mock objects, NMock was really the only game in town. It's been a while. A lot of new stuff has come up.
There's NMock, yeah. And then there's NMock 2, which I guess is now the recommended version if you visit the old NMock site.
Well, let's just talk about what the goal of these things is first. You know, what's the goal of a mock object framework? I guess it's to take the grunt work out of managing mock objects, right?
Well, yeah, so that's a good point. So if you write a test, you know, you go public void test and you put your test attribute on the top and then you right click and you say run test and you have a bunch of assertions, right? So you assert that this will be equal to that, or you assert that whatever is returned from this function is equal to something, right?
Yeah.
But with a mock, you want to not just have assertions, you have actually expectations. So you might have an object called person. And you might expect that get first name is going to return Scott for whatever reason. Maybe it was populated from the database or whatever, but you need to know that that's your expectation. So you could do what we did before. We talked about making something that implements iPerson. You have to create an interface, da 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 da. Or with a mock framework, you could say in your test, I expect the call to person.get, you know, get first name to return Scott. And I expect that, and I'm going to warn you, Mr. Test Mock Object thing, ahead of time. So then when I turn you on and actually do the work, you're going to do the right faking that's appropriate.
So it basically is going to just go ahead and build an object that's going to provide the behavior that the test expects. And then once you have that framework, then you can go in and change the mock stuff to real code. Is that right? Is this like a prototype then?
No, so what you're trying to do is, let's say that you've got some analysis tool that makes a bunch of calls to an underlying object system and then performs some analysis. Mm-hmm. You're not testing the underlying system, you're testing the analysis.
Right.
So you could spend a whole bunch of time getting that underlying interface set up, or you could really just focus on the results.
I see.
You know that assuming that my expectations are correct, right? Assuming that person.firstname does in fact return Scott, which isn't the point of the test. It's the point of the thing that consumes that value.
I see. So right? The purpose is to get tests up and running quickly, not to prototype the underlying code.
Right, right. Now, you could use it that way. I mean, you could go and say, I'm not quite sure how it's going to get that value. So you could use mock objects within the context of test-driven development. So you brought up an interesting point, which is a little orthogonal to the direction that we were going. But you could say, I'm going to write my test as like a specification. I expect it to work like this. So you could basically mock out most of your system. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's a really good way to do it. You could say, this thing I want to write is going to be really complicated, but I know when it comes out, it's going to say Scott.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that's a really great way to design a framework, right? If you don't know how your data access layer should behave, you can basically mock up the whole thing and then fill in the blanks later.
Right.
So that's a great way to use mocking within the context of having the tests drive your development. So you've brought up a really great point. So let's talk about like some of the examples. Like, for example, NMock, the protocol is basically you make a new mockery, which is kind of cool.
You know, mockery? Is that what they call it?
Yeah. Mockery, M equals new mockery. Right?
Okay.
And let's say that you want to mock a person. So you'd go and say mock.newMock, and you say type of person. So you say, I want to mock a person. And then what's cool is you actually just say, you know, person P equals mock.newMock, and you get a person out of it. And then you cast, because the mock.newMock returns an object. You have to cast it to the object that you're expecting.
Okay.
So then you have a person. Now, this is where the syntax gets really cool, I think. So in, with NMock 2, you go and you say something like expect dot once on person dot get property quote first name dot will return a value of Scott. So it's really a big long dot syntax, but it reads like English. Expect once on person get property first name will return Scott.
Okay.
And it ends up being a lot of dots in parentheses. So you basically prepare your expectations. So here's a good example. I'll just use one from a blog post that I read about NMock at shrinkster/i59. And in this example, they had items that are going in a shopping cart. It's not the items we're trying to test. It's the shopping cart.
Yeah.
Okay. So the shopping cart is going to compute the total of the items. So we'll mock two items. We'll fake out two items, okay, and we'll add them to the shopping cart. The items aren't real, but the shopping cart doesn't care. Then we call shopping cart compute total. We've told the items ahead of time, if anyone calls price on you, here are the values you should return. Those values, those lies that we've set up, those expectations we've set up, have been set up in the test. We didn't have to create any phony objects to do it. We test the shopping cart. We say compute total, and then the assertion that the total equals a certain amount lives in the same function that the expectations lived. So the test data and the assertion live in the same place, which makes the management of your test a lot easier.
Yeah.
So, and here we are testing a shopping cart, passing it real items that aren't implementing an interface that it understands. Now, one of the interesting things about NMock and most of the mock things that I've seen are that a lot of them use strings and kind of reflection type stuff. So in this example, you would say, expect on item dot get property, and then you put in quotes the name of the property that you're going to be calling. Okay. So in this case, I might say item, I put in quotes price. We don't get compiler support there. We don't know that price is really, on the item. If we misspell it, because we've put the name of the property in quotes, it's a string, it's being tunneled, we don't have that kind of IntelliSense support for this fake object. Now, Ayendi Rahin, a.k.a. Orinini, writes RhinoMox, and what he's done is he said, you know, I really didn't like that I have to pass in these quotes. I want the syntax to be cleaner. I want IntelliSense for my mock objects.
Yeah.
So his syntax is you make a mock repository and you say repository create mock, type of person, you do same kind of thing. And then in your expectations, you would actually say expect.call, and then you put in parentheses, and then you actually call the fake function. Okay, so you'd say expect.call, parentheses, and then you'd say, you know, person.whatever, put that in parentheses and say dot return. So in that case, you're getting IntelliSense because you're actually passing in a fake call and he's intercepting that call.
That's interesting.
Then when you're done setting up your expectations, you say, okay, repository, replay. And then you do your tests.
That's an interesting way to do it. I would die without IntelliSense. So that's a great way to do
it. So I mean, I think RhinoMox has some limitations in that the things that you want to mock have to be marked virtual. Because what he's doing internally is he's basically making a derived class of the thing that you want to mock, returning you, like, so, for example, I'm saying mock a person. He's going to make secret internal derived person and then pass it back, and you'll cast it to a person and you don't care. And then when you make the call, because you marked it virtual, indicating you want to change it, that lets him basically get in.
Isn't that a little dangerous, though? I mean, what if your app is doing a lot of casting and you know, dealing with
types?
Well,
if you have a big... If you have a big object hierarchy and marking something virtual isn't what you want to do, because basically when you mark something virtual, you're saying, I intend someone to extend this in the future. And if you're trying to use a tool like RhinoMox on a series of objects that have not been marked virtual, you can't do it. Then you got to get into some of the more advanced mocking technologies like TypeMock.
So how does that, how does the word virtual translate to VB programmers, just curiously?
I think it's overwritable in VB.
Okay.
So abstract in C sharp is must inherit in VB, and virtual is overwritable.
Okay. Not must override, but overwritable.
Right.
Got it.
So you're basically, you're saying, I will in the future extend this object, and I want to open it up for that. So then people talk about virtual calls being slower, because if I hand you a person object, you don't know if it's really a person object or if it's actually a really tall person object that derives from person.
Yeah.
Because when you go and call person.height, you're really calling the derived class overridden implementation of height. So what Ayendi is doing that's very clever is, right, is using that virtualness as an opportunity to build up his fake versions of the same objects. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool. So other than RhinoMox, what are some of the other tools out there?
So from what I'm seeing, I have not personally used TypeMock, but I'm understanding and reading their documentation, which is very good documentation. I've been impressed reading their documentation. TypeMock at Shrinkster / I5B. This seems to be the big stuff. This is the heavy guns. I was reading an article by Roy Osherov. I think it was at Shrinkster / I5A, and he was saying that, you know, when you can't get your mocking done with one thing, you bring in the big guns, and it's TypeMock. Hmm. TypeMock has got this thing called natural TypeMocks, which basically you set up a scope, you say using, and then you have a using block, and you say record expectations, start recording, and then everything in the block is being mocked. It's
wow.
Kind of TiVo for your mock objects, okay? Everything's being mocked. So you basically mock it, and you just call the methods, and then it just fakes it all and intercepts it.
Wow.
Then you do your assertions, and then at the very end, you say, okay, well, now verify, mock manager, verify that all of our expectations were met. So it's a very powerful, very natural way to do things.
Yeah.
Now, those guys have got a community version, and they've got a professional and enterprise editions. I'm looking online here what the prices are. Looks like, and you get testdriven.net. Looks like it's $300. They got enterprise, personal, and then they've got their community edition. And they've got a series of what features are available in what versions. Hmm. All of their stuff is very kind of intercepted. Everything's on the fly.
Right.
They'll let you do a lot more advanced type stuff. From reading their documentation, they've got MS build tasks for mocking, NAT tasks. I mean, this is a complete mock.
They're serious
universe.
About it.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I like about RhinoMox, not to come back to the free product, but RhinoMox has a .NET 1.1 version.
Hmm.
And I always like it when people have both. And I think it's great that he respects 1.1 and realizes that useful work is happening on 1.1.
Sure. And especially if you're writing tools that are going to be used by people on 1.1, 2.0, and whatever else.
Yeah, totally. I'm using his RhinoMox 2.9 to do some 1.1 mocking. His stuff is pretty cool. The only limitation, of course, is that virtual thing that is a little frustrating. But you know, you can work your way around things like that. I know that Phil Hack uses that, I think, in subtext for a lot of his mocking.
Okay.
Now, there's also NUnit itself has some mock technology built into it with NUnit 2. There's a discussion of that at Shrinkster / I5E. And it seems to be kind of interface-based. It's kind of the standard mock object stuff is I want to mock something that implements a certain interface. And that makes things really easy because an interface is just a contract. So then you can just say, well, go ahead and fake this out for me.
Yeah.
Say new dynamic mock and then mock this interface and then go ahead and give me a fake instance. And then you use kind of reflection style string stuff to say, well, I expect this to happen when you call this. So just to make sure that we're clear, because this is a little confusing, because everything starts with N, right? So this is actually mock objects within NUnit. So there's NMock, which is a little older,
okay.
And that has been subsumed by NMock 2. Okay, so NMock 2 is the one we were talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's RhinoMock. There's TypeMock, which is the big, expensive, most powerful one.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some lightweight kind of mock object stuff in NUnit 2. that lets you mock interfaces very cleanly. And it's already built into the NUnit that you're already using. So you already go and say, using NUnit.framework. Here you just go and say, using NUnit.mocks. You can go and say, well, I expect exceptions. So you can say, when this mock gets called on this function, throw a new exception. That ties in nicely with the expected exception attributes that are built into to NUnit. So you don't have to pick one and just go with that. You can pick the one that feels the most natural. Sometimes you'll use RhinoMock for most of your mocking, and then you'll pull out TypeMock for the big guns for doing the really complicated stuff.
Scott, what about Microsoft Visual Studio Team System? Is there anything in Team System for doing mock objects?
Well, there's lots of unit testing, you know, in Team System, but there doesn't appear to be anything that explicitly calls out mock objects.
Okay.
You know, they're not going to do it for you. You can certainly use mocks within Team System and
then
run
and
the test on those mocks.
Sure, of course you can use any of these tools because it's Visual Studio.
Right, but Team System doesn't include their own view of mock objects, which is probably a good thing because there's a lot of people who've already put thought into that, and I don't think we need another thing invented over again.
All right. Scott, you were telling me about an article you read from IBM about mock objects.
Yeah, it's a little bit of an older article, but I thought it was useful. It was at Shrinkster/I0P. Talks about just kind of the concepts behind mock objects. It speaks a little bit of a Java speak, but it explains the idea of the mock object being that middleman, that opportunity to do the interception and some of the theory behind that, when you would make the decisions to mock something and when you wouldn't.
Okay. That's a good question. When would you? I mean, we've given a lot of information about mock objects and about tools, but when do you need mock objects? What are your criteria for saying, this would be mockable?
So that's a very, very good question. So I'll give you a couple of concrete examples of times when I've needed to use it. Like recently I was working on an article for Coding for Fun, and I was using a barcode scanner. And, I had these unit tests that needed that raw data, and I had an iBarcode scanner interface, and I was going back and forth, and I kept having to pause things and then do manual scanning. So here was an example of some external thing, in this case, a barcode, and I really needed to capture its data. Now, I could have just, captured its data and pasted it directly into the test and bypassed the exercising of its interface, but because I'd gone to the effort to abstract away that bit of hardware, it was useful to go and make a mock barcode scanner that would return kind of TiVo'd data.
So something that that returns non-deterministic results maybe would be a good.
Right. I kept scanning this over and over again, but it was in this case I kept scanning the same three books, and I wanted to take a look at not just the interaction between my test and the barcode scanner, but to make sure that I wasn't corrupting some internal data structures as I went and scanned those books. So I kept scanning these books manually, and I was like, oh, this is ridiculous. I'll just go and use an ordered RhinoMock and say that this is what I'm expecting to get back the next three times that I do the scanning. That was an example where I really should have thought about mock objects right off the bat. Because like you had mentioned at the very beginning of us talking, knowing about mock objects ahead of time can allow you to actually design with mocks in mind.
Right.
And make the interface that you're going to end up using a lot cleaner.
Yeah.
I think also another good example would be to anytime you've got a web service that provides data or any kind of data service or data access layer, that being able to do mocking when the testing of the data access layer isn't the point, but it's those things that consume it, do analysis on it, that you're going to be doing the testing on.
Scott, one other thing. You said if you want to get started with mock objects, probably download NMock 2 and download EasyMock or RhinoMocks. Why not, if you're serious about this and you've got the money, just go right to something like TypeMock and use that all the time?
Well, if I were a guy working by myself, if I were a one-man shop, I would probably eventually end up buying TypeMock.net. It is the most advanced that I've seen. It has a very, very nice syntax. It's got you know, all sorts of support for little bits of fluff that only a polished application has, like automatic updating and 64-bit, you know, and static instructors and stuff. But, you know, for the most part, you're going to get what you need out of NMOC 2 and or RhinoMock.
Okay.
For some of the basic stuff you're doing. So, you know, I don't know. I don't think that I would standardize on an entire enterprise when there's such a great open source story out there.
I see.
You know? I mean, I don't know the guys at TypeMocks, but
right.
I was able to go and start mocking my stuff with RhinoMocks very quickly. I mean, it was so obvious. And then within NMOC, the syntax is so intuitive. Basically, you're building up these sentences to say, I expect all this to go down the way it goes down, you know. It's so intuitive. Like in the context of doing banking, right? We do a lot of, you know, online banking at my company. Being able to go and say, I expect this value of this, you know, this account to have this much money and this account to have that much. I'm going to transfer some money, and then now I expect these values to be this way, and then to have mocked out the entire back end for a banking system to be so easy in NMOC. So between NMOC and RhinoMock, it covers the 80-90% case.
Okay.
But it's good to know that TypeMock's out there to test existing systems, right? Sometimes you might have a test system that you can't design, you can't mark this virtual, or you can't redesign that. That's when you bring in the intercepting stuff like TypeMock.
All right, great. Well, that's the show, Scott. Thanks very much, and I'm sure that the listeners appreciate your analysis of mock objects. Thanks. And we'll talk to you next week on Hanselminutes.